91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. The New Yorker's humorist Patricia Marks subjected herself to 4 months of test exercises and mental gyrations, plus consumed loads of blueberries to see if she could increase her IQ, memory, and intelligence. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. She studied the science of aging in some hilarious situations. Her memoir about getting smarter, if we really can, is called Let's Be Less Stupid, an attempt to maintain my mental faculties. She could learn Cherokee, but still look for eyeglasses while wearing them. Patricia Marks in minutes. Later, Linda Gastenheimer's Food and Dining will get the lowdown on the much-savored contemporary cuisine of Peru. That's next. First, the news. And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, we're both bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. It's our Thursday laid-back pre-weekend edition. Bonnie, we're both boomers. I don't suppose you ever worry about losing your mental acuity as you grow older.
Of course I
never,
don't.
Never.
Never, no. So what about you?
Well, I've worried about my mental acuity, I guess, from an early age, like fifth grade in fractions, and it's getting worse.
Well, let's see what we can do. We begin this hour with humorist Patricia Marks and her quest to examine and increase her mental powers. She's a staff writer at The New Yorker, a former Saturday Night Live writer, and award-winning author.
And her just-released book, July 17th, I believe, is Let's Be Less Stupid, an attempt to maintain my mental faculties. I did miserably on the quirky brain teasers in the book this weekend, but I did have a few laughs. I guess you did too, Bonnie.
Yes, so did I. Well, now you have your Patty Marks, but since she took this 4 months to increase her brain power, her name is now Patricia Marks.
Oh, okay, more formal.
Yes, and she joins us from Inglewood, California. Welcome to you, Patricia.
Thank you. You can call me Patty.
Oh, good. Okay, thank you.
Well, I'm very smart.
Okay, yes, good. I did laugh my way through your book, but on another level, my understanding is that you, also a baby boomer, were or actually are terrified of losing your mind. Is that still true?
Not as terrified, but like all baby boomers, well, not like all baby boomers, but there is a study that said that many, many baby boomers are more nervous about losing their minds than dying, and I was one of them. I used to have conversations with my friends that would go like this. No, my brain's really bad. No, mine's bad. No, mine's worse than yours.
Right.
No, did you put toothpaste on your contact lenses? That's not fair. I don't have contact lenses. And you realize you're in a competition that you want to win, but to win means that you're sort of getting the booby prize. So I decided to see what I could do about my, to find out if there was anything wrong with my brain and if there was anything I could do about it.
Okay.
And I do feel a little better about my brain now. So I spent 4 months doing everything that I could possibly stand that was recommended by scientists to either delay the symptoms of cognitive delay or stop them or minimize them. And I had my IQ taken before and after, and I had my brain imaged before and after.
Okay, well, first tell us about that story about when you went and you did the online IQ test.
All right, before I
wouldn't dare do that.
No, I don't think I would either.
Well, you're supposedly your IQ turns out to be higher when you do on these online tests. Most of them are free, although many of them are not really free because you have to pay for the results. So I decided to take a few, and the first one I took, I thought, I am acing this. I am so smart. My mother is right. I'm good. And Then I clicked for the results, and I had an IQ of 74, which is, you know, you would need assistance just to get dressed with 74.
All right.
It turns out that the test was timed, something I had never really considered, having not read the directions, which I tend not to do. And so it could be argued that I deserved that 74. I voted for mayor that day while I was taking, I would do part of the test, vote for mayor, do part of the test, have lunch. So that's why I earned my 74.
Right. Okay, well, let's talk about some of the things you did during these 4 months, like learning Cherokee.
I learned Cherokee because language, not surprisingly, is good for your brain, and bilinguals do better on lots of tests.
But why Cherokee?
Well, honestly, I was confusing it with Navajo. Navajo was what cryptographers used as a way of breaking the code during World War II, and I thought, well, I'll be sitting pretty in during World War III with my knowledge of Cherokee. Cherokee. It turns out that they did use Cherokee, too. But the other thing that I liked about Cherokee is it's a fairly simple language, so I thought I could learn it really quickly. And not that many people speak it, so nobody really would know if I was speaking Cherokee.
Yeah, you just do some yo ho yah yah ba.
I
think that's politically incorrect.
I was thinking that, too. I'm glad you said it. But shiyu is hello. Gigayu is it's sort of I love you, but it's more than that. It's I will die for you, I will give you my food, I will let you have my last breath, but you know, you cannot have my last piece of pie,
something like that. Mm-hmm. And how did the meditation work for you?
Oh, all my friends meditate. They swear by meditation. They say it's made them smarter and calmer and everything else. I tried meditation many times, and I really couldn't do it. It was just another word for daydreaming for me. It made me more nervous. Do you either of you meditate?
It's hard for me, but yes, I have at times. Joe?
A few times I've tried without many results. It's
science likes it. It reduces stress. It makes you more creative. It, I don't know. I found it very hard to do. Maybe I'll try it again because I keep reading all these positive studies about it.
Yeah, it even lowers your blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how about puzzles and things, Patty? I used to do a couple of crosswords a day, not the New York Times necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that doing those crosswords winds up is that you're just good at doing crosswords, and then you might know a heraldic band is an O-R-L-E, but that's about all.
Right. Well, you get better at crosswords. And everything I did, even including Cherokee, maybe with the exception of meditation, I got better at. I did Lumosity exercises. I got much better at Lumosity exercises. I did. I learned piano scales. I did physical exercise. I got better at that. Turns out crossword puzzles, if you do them every day, you're right. You learn that auk means seabird. The fundamental question in this area is whether or not any of these activities have a ripple effect and whether or not they boost your IQ in general. And the jury's kind of out on that. But crossword puzzles, well, what they really recommend is that you keep trying novel activities that challenge your brain, and the theory being that after a while, it's just a little routine to do the crossword puzzle.
And the same with the Lumosity. I do that too. Someone made me part of their family plan.
Mm-hmm.
So all that's happening is I'm getting really good at playing all the games, but I don't notice that that my intelligence has changed.
No, I'm not sure. And it makes you feel confident because you're getting much better. There are some games, Lumosity has a few of them, Posit has a couple, where they train your eye to be faster. And that probably makes you a better driver. I mean, studies have shown that those kind of things make you a better driver. I was taking a trip July 4th, and we were looking for this restaurant along the road, and I was the one who found it, and I thought, well, maybe all those hours of lumosity led to this. I think maybe I can read the credits faster.
Oh, that's good.
We're speaking with Patricia Marks about her book, Let's Be Less Stupid. Patty, I kind of enjoyed the kind of kid-like sketches that were throughout the book, especially the ones that had the brain divided into our wasted sections. We all carry around so much useless information, like remembering how to set the time on an alarm clock. Is it Lufthansa or Luftwaffe? President William Henry Ho-Hum Harrison?
Well, no.
Or diagramming a sentence?
Well, no, she has a diagram to deal with the information overload. So Patricia gives us some direction as to who we should forget, such as Presidents Van Buren, Tyler, Taylor, Harrison, and Fillmore.
Correct. And then I think I have Shakespeare plays you don't really need to know about anymore.
Right.
And there's so much we don't have to know. We don't have to know phone numbers. We don't have to know spelling. We don't have to know the floor plan of the Brady Bunch household. We don't have to know who shot JR.
But sometimes you can't delete those things. That's
I know you can't delete. In fact, you really can't delete. Long-term memory, it's believed, is there forever. It might get fainter. And the problem is retrieving it and recalling it. And there's a guy named Ramskar who has a very optimistic theory about getting stupider, which, in fact, he says the reason we're getting stupider is we're getting smarter, and that we are cramming our brain with so much information that it's hard to retrieve bits of information. The same way if you stuffed your sock drawer, it would be hard to find those polka dot socks that you're looking for.
And what did Daniel Levitin said? And I should mention here that the book does have a large sprinkling of facts in it. And
It'll make you really interesting at a cocktail party.
Right, right. So what did Daniel Levitin say? Because I forgot.
Daniel Levitin said that we absorb the equivalent of 174 newspapers a day, which is five times more than we had to put up with in 1986. And by we, I don't think I'm doing that. I can barely get through the Times. There are other similar factoids like that, some that I like. In just 2 years, we generate more information, not the three of us, but the world, than was produced from the dawn of civilization to 2003.
That is really,
it's one frightening,
really,
isn't it?
Yeah, that blew me away. It did. Well, we need to take a break. I think of some questions, Patty, because when we come back, maybe you should test Joe.
No.
We're speaking with Patricia Marks. She's an American humorist and writer, and she's a staff writer now with The New Yorker, teaches at Princeton and the 92nd Street Y. And she's written Let's Be Less Stupid, an attempt to maintain my mental faculties. We'll be right back.
And it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, 20 minutes after 1 o'clock. And we're visiting with humorist Patricia Marks. We're talking about her book again, Let's Be Less Stupid, an attempt to maintain my mental faculties. And you also dabbled in diet, Patricia. Can we eat anything that actually makes our mind work better?
Well, it turns out that most of what is recommended is really boring. Blueberries are supposedly good. Salmon's good. The Mediterranean diet, people just love the Mediterranean diet. But here's some good news. It turns out that alcohol does not kill neurons, as we were told by our parents.
That's good news.
It is good news. If you drank enough alcohol to kill yourself, then you would also kill your neurons, but you probably have bigger problems in your neurons at that point.
Right.
But it does, if you drink too much, it does a lot of damage to your dendrites, which are help your brain cells communicate with one another. So it's like the internet goes down.
You know, you were talking before about how you spotted this place you were driving to, and it made me think of that fact you give that male drivers drive extra miles each year more than women because they get lost, or because they can't find what they're looking for, and they drive actually more miles than women looking for places.
Yeah, I think it's, they drive 576 miles out of their way, whereas women only drive 556 miles away. It also turns out that men and women navigate differently. Men are more intuitive about directions, whereas women, they look for landmarks. They have better memories than men.
Men's brains are bigger.
Men's brains are, I think, either men's brains are 8% bigger than women, or elephant brains are 8% bigger than humans, or the other is, men's brains are 8% bigger than women's brains, and elephant's brains are bigger than human brains by 6%, meaning men are bigger than women.
And elephants are bigger than people.
Exactly. But the hippocampus, which is sort of the memory center of the brain, is bigger relatively in women than men.
Well, also, as far as that French fries quiz went, I'm afraid you're going to have to report me to the Secretary of the Interior.
That was a hard one, wasn't it?
That was a really hard one.
I didn't get Canada. I was trying to do the directions one, and I couldn't. I think I got them all wrong.
Geography,
yeah.
Well, if you'd like to ask a very intelligent question to Patty March, you can call us at 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576, talking about her book, Let's Be Less Stupid. Or you can call us, email us at radio@WLRN.org. We have an emailer from Vicki. She says, the jury's out as to whether your IQ is raised. I guess she means when you do these crossword puzzles and Lumosity and all that.
Do you mean mine or everyone's?
No. She's saying whether one's IQ is raised. But she said, I would think it makes a real noticeable benefit. It might be a noticeable benefit. Might be better mental agility. She wants to know what you have to say about that.
Well, the jury's out about that, too. I mean, certainly, if you don't do anything intellectual, Lumosity is going to help you. The things that they agree upon that help you are exercise, which is a kind of a disappointment to me because I like sitting down, social engagement, which is clear to anybody who's had a baby and is home alone with the baby, and reducing stress. Now, I forget why we're talking about this. Lumosity.
Agility.
And
engaging in new activities. So if you don't do anything that's making you think, Lumosity is going to help. I don't know if it really made my mind more agile.
Explain brain reserve and cognitive reserve.
All right. It is believed that if you have more neural connections or stronger ones, you can delay the symptoms of Alzheimer's if you had it. And how they came to this conclusion is that they did autopsies of people who seemed to have all the symptoms physiologically of Alzheimer's. They had plaques in their brains, and yet they didn't show any symptoms when they were alive of having Alzheimer's. And it was hypothesized that if you've done enough good things for your brain, you basically built a lot of road work so that if you can, you know, go a different way around the plaque. I think I'm not explaining this well, but so that the brain reserve and cognitive reserve. Brain reserve are just extra pathways and neurons that you're born with. And if you have those, you're able to compensate for a while if you have Alzheimer's. Cognitive reserve is white matter that you accrue over your life. And it's like having money in the bank. It's also found that these people who have higher brain reserve and cognitive reserve, they get Alzheimer's later, but once they get it, they deteriorate faster.
Mm.
Well, talking about the physical aspects of the brain, Patty, you also had before and after fMRIs. Now, we all know that the F means that it's an MRI of the brain, but this business of the MRI...
I wanted it to mean fabulous.
It means functional, right? That it tracks the fluids in the brain.
It's the activity of your brain as opposed to just the structure of your brain.
And how does it work? That was kind of interesting, the way you explained it, that it tracks the fluids in the brain, the blood flow.
It's tracking the water it's tracking the blood flow. And so when more blood is going to an area of your brain, it means that your brain is working harder. In fact, when you get good at something, as some of us are getting very good at Lumosity, then your brain is getting not working as hard. So it's sort of a little bit counterintuitive. That when your brain is not working hard, it means you're kind of getting smarter at it. So I had this MRI. I never had an MRI before. And everybody had warned me that it's a horrible thing, that it's claustrophobic. I liked it. It turns out I like claustrophobia. And the noise didn't bother me because I'm a New Yorker. And I got the results, and the technician said, good news, your brain has gotten 33% bigger in many areas. And I told that news to my boyfriend, who's a scientist, who kind of laughed at me and said, if that were true, your brain would be oozing out of your ears and mouth and nose right now, which, I mean, we're on radio, but trust me, it's not.
That's not pretty. And what about this wait, we have a call you want to take?
Okay, let's take Louisa in Plantation. Hi there.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question. My husband is an extremely smart man in many, many things, but I always find that the small tasks, things that are very simple, that seems like a person would pay attention to and a woman would pay attention to and do it, you know, properly, he seems to have a hard time even after 30 years of saying things like, you can't put things very, very tall on top of in the dishwasher because it stops the propeller from going around and washing the dishes. So can you just not put things all the way up to the top by stack them up? And then he seems to do the same things over and over, but not just that, many little things. So I wonder, did you ever find that there is some kind of cognitive behavior in men that they don't pay attention, or is it just a lack of interest?
I guess you're talking about common sense, Patty?
Yeah, common sense things, yeah.
Okay, Patty.
Well, I think that men are better at some things like spatial reasoning, and women, I think, do seem better at big picture thinking, and that's maybe what you're talking about. But, you know, even I think women pack suitcases better, so I don't really know about that spatial reasoning.
Yeah, definitely.
And women are more verbal. A lot has to do with paying attention, too. And maybe, I don't know, I mean, women have better, now I forget, even though women have better memories, it might be that he's not focused or something.
Especially after, I think Louisa said 30 years or something like that.
I missed a little of it. It was hard to hear.
Yeah, it wasn't a good connection. Well, I must admit that my attempts at the tests in the book made me feel anything but smarter. So now I'm terrorized about losing my mind. So thanks, Patty.
If I've made you terrified, then I've done my job.
Thanks. We've been speaking with Patty Marks. She's a humorist and writer, works as the staff writer for The New Yorker, teaches at Princeton University and 92nd Street Y, and she's a former writer for Saturday Night Live and Rugrats and the first woman elected to the Harvard Lampoon. That's quite an honor. We've been talking about her latest book, Let's Be Less Stupid, An Attempt to Maintain My Mental Faculties. Well, I hope it worked out. Our readers will have to read the book to find out if it works, right?
Mm-hmm. I have a secret to wisdom at the end.
That's right. Okay. Thanks, Patty.
Thank you.
Food and Dining, up next. And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. Did you learn anything on our previous segment, Bonnie?
Yes.
I'll speak for me.
That, okay, go ahead.
I'm really not very smart anymore.
No.
Maybe I wasn't ever. I don't know. Well, chef, author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gastenheimer joins us now. She was a little tied up on the highways on our way here. Today we're getting a taste of a cuisine that's increasingly popular from South America.
Yes, we are. And hello, and I'm glad to be here. And yes, do not go
there. She called ahead saying she might be late.
3:95 is chock-a-block. Do not get on it.
You could have used that meditation there, Linda.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, Peruvian food. Anticucho. I hope that's right. Anticucho. Ají amarillo. Well, if you haven't heard these terms yet, you're going to, because Peruvian restaurants are really, really popular now. Bonnie's nodding her head as she's eating. Sanjay Dawadi is the executive chef at Coya Restaurant and Bar, and he's here to tell us more about this amazing cuisine and also how Coya is going to be celebrating Peru's Independence Day on July 28th. So welcome, Chef Sanjay.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me here.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. You brought this food in, and Bonnie's been gorging herself on it. Okay, so we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have any questions for our chef here, Sanjay? Or what is your favorite Peruvian dish? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN.
Or email is radio@WLRN.org.
And our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker, he's on vacation this week. He'll be back next week.
I wonder what he's doing right now.
Well, probably,
probably having a drink,
champagne.
Probably. Anyway, he gives the wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes columns, and you can also read Fred's wine column. It's in Saturday's Miami Herald. He did, though, send some Peruvian information for us, so we'll more on that later. But now let's go to Sanjay. Sanjay, you mentioned to me before the show that Coya serves true Peruvian cuisine with a contemporary twist. So what's true Peruvian cooking?
I mean, true Peruvian cooking really is just a basis of ceviches, anticuchos, papas secas, and what I try to do, or what I have been doing for the last 2.5 years, is using the best of Peru and using the best of the Western techniques and putting them all together.
I'm going to stop you right there, because what is anticucho?
Anticucho is like, see, Peruvian food is a big influence of Japanese, Chinese, and Spanish food. So from this Japanese influence, you have the yakitoris. And what they've done is they call themselves the anticuchos. So they're just skewers of meat, fish, vegetables, cooked on charcoal.
In the Japanese style. So that's why you have all this fusion of all these wonderful Asian flavors.
Exactly.
And South American flavors.
Absolutely.
All together.
I mean, like, again, you know, like one of the favorite anticuchos, which we are doing for our Independence Day as well, is ox heart anticuchos.
Ox heart?
Exactly. So like about 90% of the people, I will not tell them what it is. And they're going to say, because if I tell you that this is an oxtail anticucho, a lot of people are going to be saying, oh, I don't want this. But when you have it, it just melts in your mouth because it's a combination of some spices, some vinegar, some olive oil, some black pepper, and some oregano. And what happens with the vinegar, it cooks it, it just melts it. So it's just, when you taste it, it just melts in your mouth, really.
He's tasting it as in his mouth as he's talking.
Hey, listen, I can talk about food all day.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. And so what you do is you take all of these traditional dishes.
Correct.
And then you add some...
Some of my own touches. So say, example, we have a ceviche clásico. So for that, I just use this beautiful Florida red snapper. And we just follow the whole procedure of what we do in Peru. The only difference is in Peru, when you go, people cut the fish into big chunks. Mine is cut into really, really finely diced, all equal sizes. And it's mixed with this leche de tigre.
You've said a lot of things.
Yes.
That's the tiger's milk. And that's what we do every morning at 11:30 when I speak to my chefs, is the tiger's ready.
What's in it?
So it's fish stock, made very, not like the French. It's just, what I want is a flavor of the sea. So that's what exactly, that's the first attempt. The next thing is we add some coriander, sorry, which you call it cilantro here, some onions, and we blitz that with some ginger. And that becomes the base with some freshly squeezed lime juice. And that base, now to that we either add ají limo, all these different chilies, ají limo, ají amarillo.
So ají means chili.
Correct.
Okay.
So it's not
and
a classic.
Why is it called
tiger's? It's not a classic fumet.
No, it's not.
How do you like that, Linda?
I like your French.
Joe, I'm impressed that you even knew what that was. So now, Bonnie,
I want to know why it's called tiger's milk.
Because what? what you have is like, take a fish, you add some lime juice and some salt, and when the water, you'll have some residue. And that residue looks like milk. And the reason it's called tiger's milk, I don't know why they call it tiger, but I think it sounds, I like the sound of it.
Okay.
Leche de tigre, you know?
Bonnie, you've been eating the ceviche.
The corn.
But he's been talking about the ceviche.
Yes.
So tell us about that, because it is unbelievable.
Well, it melts in your mouth, actually. Not,
but there's this wonderful flavor.
The gorgeous flavors.
And it's crunchy. So... What's in it?
So we have, again, the Peruvians are known for their corn. And one of the corns which you have is called cancha. And what you do with the cancha is you fry that. And it's amazing because...
It's regular corn kernels that are fried?
No, this is called choclo. It's a
Peruvian
corn.
That's the big one in here?
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Looks like a clove of garlic almost.
Yeah, and it's so meaty. It's like, I love sweet corn, but this is a very unusual type of corn as well, you know? And it's only... We are trying at the moment also that I want to get it grown in Florida as well, in Miami. So that's the project of the year this year as well,
okay.
To have everything grown
in,
here.
We have red snapper in there?
Correct.
And
so we have red snapper, leche de tigre. We have some chopped chilies, some ají limo, some sliced onion, some cilantro, some sweet potatoes, because the sweet potato gives you the sweetness,
yeah.
Because
yes.
It's so spicy as well.
Because some ceviches are too acid.
Exactly.
Too much.
Would you chunk it up smaller so that it'll be more thoroughly cooked in the acid?
No, I will just chunk it up at the right size, which is like about a centimeter, no, or even a half a centimeter, about a half centimeter.
It's about a half inch to an inch.
Yeah.
A half inch, really. Yeah.
And the beauty also is... What we need to do is, when we are making a ceviche, is to get the right balance. You need to get the right balance of the fish. You need to get the right balance of the chilies and the lime. So when you have it, they all in harmonize each other. One should not go over the other thing as well.
That's wonderful, because I don't always like, as everyone knows, a hot, hot, spicy food.
Yes.
But this was just delicious.
Spices and chilies should be used to tingle your tongue. Not to taste of it.
I love that. And it does tingle your tongue. And Bonnie can't talk because she's busy eating.
No, I finally swallowed.
So now tell us about the corn that she's
Again,
got.
Again, like I was saying, corn is big in Peru. And one of the things which I love, in especially in Miami as well, is the sweet corn. The sweet corn is what it is. It's sweet. So what I've done is we have like four or five different types of corn. So we have steamed sweet corn, We have Jasper's sweet corn, which I'd like to talk
about. We're going about to talk Jasper about Jasper in a minute, yes.
Which is like a charcoaled sweet corn. And then you have the kancha, which I was talking to you about before. And then you have also the choclo. So you have these four different corns. And I, what I do is I make a dressing with some rice wine vinegar, some mirin, some olive oil, and some chopped chilies. And that's it. Simple as that.
But just it's so it nice because it's got the sweetness, it's got the crunchy.
It has the
and
it's
got
vinegar.
All these different
and
textures.
I can't talk because it's my mouth is watering.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's what, you know, when I first came up with this dish as well, I never envisaged that it's going to be the most popular, one of the most popular dishes in Koya. I mean, when we opened Koya in London, you know, me speaking to my vegetable guy and said, like, okay, can I please have 200 sweet corns for the weekend? I mean, the guy just fell off his chair. It's like, what? 200? Like, exactly. And now it's like everyday business, really.
Right. Well, now you mentioned Jasper. So what is, you have a Jasper oven. It's one of two in Miami. So what
yeah,
is
I'm,
it?
Yeah, I mean, Jasper oven is it's made in Spain. We are the only restaurant, I believe, to have two Jaspers and a 3-yard-old Rabata.
Rabata is an open grill.
Correct, yeah. Yes. Now, the Jasper is, it's just a basically just an oven, which is fired with charcoal.
But it looks like a regular oven with a
correct.
Door.
Yes.
A closed door, I've seen it.
And it has, you can control the smoke. You can close the shutter so that all the smoke when is emitted, it stays within the Jasper.
Or
you can
just... This is an oven that works on charcoal.
Absolutely.
There's charcoal
yeah.
burning inside the oven.
Exactly. So all the steaks, when you have a steak at Koya, or when you have the tiger prawns or the lobsters, it's all beautifully done up.
Okay. We have a phone call. Hello, Ariana in Coral Gables. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Yeah. Do you have a question?
Hi, everybody. Yes. I've been in Koya a couple of times. I love it. I'm Peruvian. I was born in Peru, raised in Peru, and I live in the state for the past 30 years. And I'm very glad that the Peruvian food, it's now all over the world, basically.
Right. Yes.
Question. I love cooking, and I wanted to ask Chef what he thinks about the famous quinoa.
Ah.
Okay. What about quinoa?
I know.
Yes.
I know.
All right, we only have about a minute.
Quinoa, for me, is, to be honest, one of the nicest salads you can have. It's very healthy. It's very fresh. And what we do at Koya at the moment is I serve it with some tamarind dressing, with some mixed herbs. So what we do is like a tabbouleh.
Tabbouleh.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So right. instead of, and we have a lot of cilantro, mint, and parsley. Mixed together with some tamarind. So you have the sweetness and the sourness at the same
okay.
time.
You don't have it in your menus yet, do you?
Pardon?
Do you have it in your
you
menu
in your
now?
Yes, I do, yeah. Yeah.
All right. Ariana, run
Thank
over
you.
There. Thank you for your call.
Yeah, I'm waiting for you.
Okay.
Okay, tell them when you come. Okay.
Yes, I will. Okay.
We're going to take a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Koya Executive Chef Sanjay Dwivedi. We'll take a short break and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. And we're talking with Koya Restaurant Executive Chef Sanjay Dwivedi. He's been telling us about their special style of Peruvian food. And they are going to be having some Independence Day celebrations on July 28th. And they sound wonderful. Before I go to dinner in minutes, there's a contest for that, isn't there?
Correct,
Chef,
yeah.
Tell
if
us.
If you try out Instagram page, what we've done is we're just doing a competition where you have some football stars. You have to name them. You have to tell us the year. And the first person who gets it right gets a free meal. With a partner, and I will come and say hello to them personally.
You mean soccer style football?
Correct. Okay. Yeah.
What's the Instagram address?
It's Koya. Koya Miami.
Koya Miami. Okay.
There's one in Dubai also.
Correct. Yeah, we have one in Dubai, and now the original one was in London. Then we opened Dubai, and then we opened Miami. Mm.
Okay. Well, it's dinner in minutes time.
Yes.
For those time when you're not going to be going to Koya. And today's dinner is walnut-crusted tuna kebabs with onion and pepper rice. These can be grilled outside or on a stovetop grill. And the tuna kebabs have a crunchy coating of chopped walnuts, and they're cooked on skewers with rings of zucchini and plump grape tomatoes. And then we have for the side dish some brown rice with some green peppers and onion. Now, to make the tuna kebabs, I mix some apricot jam and some chopped walnuts, and I cover the, and the chef, he's nodding, oh, it sounds okay, right, Chef?
Yeah, it sounds great.
Okay. And I thread the tuna and vegetables on skewers, and here's my tip. I always put the meat, whatever I'm going to put on a kebab, on one skewer, and I put my vegetables on another because they cook at different times and temperatures and all, so it makes it easier to time your cooking. And so that's really simple. I make from the brown rice, it's dinner in minutes. I use microwavable brown rice, and I use chopped onion and chopped green bell peppers. They're frozen. So first I put those in the microwave for a minute, take those out, put the rice in, mix them all together. Really simple, easy recipe. Walnut-crusted tuna kebabs with onion and pepper rice. That's at dinnerinminutes.com, the complete recipe and a photograph. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Now, as I mentioned, Fred Tasker is on vacation, but he sent us in his drinks suggestion. And he says, if you travel to Peru, there's only one alcoholic beverage you have to try. It's pisco. And pisco means little bird in the language of Peru's Quancha. Did I say that right? Quancha Indians?
Yes.
Yes. It's powerful and a bit controversial. We'll get to the controversial part later, I suppose. Technically, it's brandy. Made like other brandies, you pick the grapes, you ferment them into wine, then you distill the wine into liquor with about, 40% alcohol. just like other brandies, scotches, gins, or vodkas. But Peru considers pisco its national drink, yes?
Correct, yes.
Okay. And caught up in the country's history and honor, Peruvian historians say it was developed in the 16th century by Spanish settlers. And it was an alternative to, now you told me, Sanjay, that you had never heard of this Arujo.
No, I never heard of that word before, no.
It was an imported Spanish brandy. Mm. And it's made with grape juice and adding water to the skins and the stems. It's kind of like grappa or mark.
It would be, yes, absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
So and you can drink lots of it at one time.
You do drink lots of it at one
time?
Yeah, okay, fine. Can't
imagine. And you feel good the next morning as well. 40% alcohol is good.
You feel good the next morning?
You feel good the next morning?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, mm. Okay.
It's pure spirit, you know, that's what it is.
He's sitting here with this big, huge smile on his face. Okay, Fred says, Peru is very strict about its pisco. There are three categories. Pure pisco is made with only one variety of local grapes. Mm-hmm. And then achulado.
Achulado, correct.
Achulado,
yes.
Is made from a blend of eight grapes. The third, most expensive kind is called Mosto Verde.
Yes.
It's made with grapes whose fermentation is stopped short of becoming a regular wine. So it has a sweetness and sugar left there. So the drink you have to try, according to Fred Tasker, is Pisco Sour.
Yes.
And he gives a recipe for it. Fred is giving us a recipe, okay?
Wow.
take out your blender, first of all, he says. Then you have 2 ounces of Pisco, a tablespoon each of sugar and lime juice, a teaspoon of pasteurized egg whites, and you whirl it with 2 or 3 ice cubes. Correct?
Yes? Absolutely, yes.
All
I mean,
right.
It's such an easy drink to make at home as well. Good lime juice is a good secret. Nice and cold. Egg whites, pasteurized, make sure they're pasteurized as well. And the beauty of it is, like what I do at Koya, we have 30 different infusions of piscos. So whatever we have in season, we are making piscos. Yesterday I made orange with cinnamon and some vanilla. We have raspberries, we have strawberries,
and all of that
apples, burnt up pineapple in the jasper, lavender, rosemary. So yeah, there's enough for everyone to have.
And it sounds to me like you test them all.
Yeah, every night.
And what's the controversial?
Okay, the controversy, coming to that. All right. The controversial part is that Chile, Peru's neighbor to the south, also claims pisco as its drink. Bonnie's eyes opened up wide now. The two countries have been arguing over this for 400 years, as recently as a liquor seminar in New Orleans in 2012. It's an argument that probably will never be settled.
Absolutely, yeah. And I have to say something which I might make people upset about this, but it's I think the Peruvians are great when it comes to pisco, and the Chileans are very good when it comes to the football. I think that's what it is.
Oh, is that how you want to put it? Okay.
Yeah, that's how I want to put it. So take it as it comes.
Please don't call the station. Just contact Sanjay, please.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Go see him.
I love you all, guys. Don't worry.
And well, let's just talk for a minute about Peruvian Independence Day is July 28th. And so, you're going to have something at the restaurant.
Yeah. So apart from that, Instagram, Facebook, Koya Miami, what we're talking also is like, I just want to just promote Peru on that day as well. It's a big day for Peruvians. So we're doing some pisco sours at $10 only. We're just doing ceviches. We're doing causas. We're doing tequinos. Oxhard anticuchos, wait. And let's celebrate, you know, the big occasion for Peruvians.
So I would suggest that if you're going to go there on July 28th, that you make reservations.
Absolutely, yes. Yes.
And what time do your celebrations start?
Start at 6 o'clock. They'll probably end up at 6 o'clock at night. I don't know. We see how it goes. You know, I mean, all good parties happen without planning. You know.
Okay. All right. That sounds great. Now we've talked about a lot of different Peruvian foods. But we missed out on what? Dessert.
Ah, yes, the dessert.
So tell us a little bit about Peruvian desserts.
Again, you know, like we were talking about, one of the beautiful, the dessert is very hot now in Miami. So one of the desserts which Peruvians have is a chicha morada, which is purple
corn. Chicha
morada.
Okay.
Which is called purple corn. And what it is, it looks purple. You cannot eat it. But what the Peruvians do is they add pineapple skins, apples, cinnamon, cloves, star anise, water, sugar.
Star anise?
Star anise, which is like
star anise.
Yeah.
Star anise, yes, okay. That's all right.
Water, sugar, and you bring it to the boil, and then that is what people have as
a drink.
Drink. But using that basis, I make that into now a dessert, which is, so I use that water to make a granite. We make a
sorbet. And a granite is a sort of a grainy sorbet.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Granite is like crushed ice, yes. You know, flavored with... And then we have these beautiful local strawberries and raspberries and blueberries.
Blueberries, yeah.
So it's gluten-free, it's dairy-free. So again, you know, it's a refreshing thing to have at the end of the meal.
Well,
and then we have chicha. We have loads of different things.
So what's another dessert?
We do one of the most beautiful chocolates which you can get from Peru. It's called Fortunata number 4. It comes especially from Peru. Chocolate which is not used by many chefs all over the world. So I love this chocolate.
How much cocoa does it have in it?
60%.
Sounds like we're going to love this chocolate.
Oh, nice. I mean, I know we are running out of time, but if somebody reads the history of Fortunata number 4, it's very interesting. But what I do is I make it a fondant with a coconut center served with white chocolate ice cream. Yum, yum, yum.
Mm. Yum, yum.
Oh, well, Bonnie, how about it? Shall
Sounds
we go?
Good. We should go.
Okay. Well, it's been a really, really tasty week. Chef Sanjay Dwivedi, thank you so much for joining us and for the very delicious food.
Thank you very much, Chef, for having me. Thank you.
Koya Restaurant and Bar is located at 999 Brickell. Fred Tasker is going to be back with us next week.
Okay.
And, excuse me. Joe and Bonnie, you ate well today.
Indeed.
We did.
Well, next week we're going to be talking with Bill Talbert, President and CEO of the Greater Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau, and Chef Ralph Pagano about Miami Spice Month's coming up.
All right.
All right. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join us then.
And that wraps up today's program. Our producer is Richard Ives, technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. For free audio archives and downloads, we have them at our website, wlrn.org. And check us out at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Drop us a like. Tomorrow at 1, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. Monday, Bonnie and I return with a program about animal cognition and emotions, one of Bonnie's favorite topics.
That's right.
We'll visit with MacArthur Fellow, ecologist, and author Dr. Carl Safina, and we'll discuss his latest book, Beyond Words, What Animals Think and Feel.
Joe, I think you sound smarter.
I don't think so,
since,
ever.
Yes, no, I think you do.
Carl Safina points out many surprising similarities of animals and humans. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Linda Gassenheimer, and absent Fred Tasker. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now next from NPR News.